Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. Coming up on Inside Coverage, what if I told you we could have the entire playoff field done this week? Wasn't it fun to watch Philip Rivers do his thing Monday night? Yeah, it was. But are the Colts actually done? Is Mike Tomlin guaranteed another season? Plus, Frank Schwab has guaranteed playoff projections. It's Jory Epstein bringing class to the show as well, as Frank and I just sit here and get angry at Christmas. Inside Coverage is next. Do you have the holiday blahs, seasonal depression? Are you not ready for Christmas, or for that matter, New Year's? Are you upset that Hanukkah is over? Well, we have the show for you. Welcome to another edition, a pick-me-up edition of Inside Coverage here on Yahoo. The how and the why, any and everything you need to know about the National Football League. My name is Andrew Siciliano, and I am with my two dear friends who both are Pro Bowl alternates. Everybody is getting votes to go to the Pro Bowl game. Say that five times fast. Not only Frank Schwab, but the great Jory Epstein back on the show today as well. Pro Bowl alternate. As Vic Fangio said, everybody and their mother, Jory, is getting votes. Congratulations.
And yet still you have coaches saying, you know, I really thought that person should have been a Pro Bowler. So we have too many. We have too few. You can't win in this life, right?
No, you can't. Carson Schwessinger should be a Pro Bowler. He should be an All-Pro. Darn it. But it is one glorious popularity contest, which is why, Frank, you got votes as well. Good day to you, sir.
I appreciate that. It's good. I can put that on my resume. Yes. Though the Pro Bowl, has anything become more irrelevant in sports than the Pro Bowl? Like, it's rough out there. It's rough out there for the Pro Bowl. And seeing all these people be named alternates doesn't really help, you know, with the prestige of the event. But hey, it's a Pro Bowl for all those who made it. Congratulations, well done. It's always a little flawed. Let's put it that way.
Well, listen, it is an honor, and I do think it is a nice resume builder. Absolutely. When agents, however, mention to general managers during contract negotiations that they went to the Pro Bowl, GMs go, who? Who cares? Like I once told a boss, hey, we got nominated for an Emmy last year. And they literally looked at me and said, who cares? We don't care. But I do think it's cool for the kids. And like Kyle Brandt last year or 2 years ago, I can't remember, I was talking to Kyle. He took his son to the Pro Bowl down in Orlando and got to walk around on the sideline as Kyle was doing some hosting activities there. And to see the kids eat it up. And I know that like my nephew loves watching it. It is. It's a games kind of deal. Whether it's like our field day back when we were kids and, you know, it's just like goofy feats of strength and throw a ball through a tire, whatever. The kids love it. And that's really all that matters, I think, in the eyes of the NFL. You're trying to build up that younger audience and keep them involved. And it still gets a better rating than the NHL finals. It still gets a better rating than NBA playoff games. Maybe not the NBA finals, but it gets a number. I know, Andrew, that's the ultimate determination of whether or not it's good TV. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it gets a good number. Anyway, you know what got a good number last night, guys? Monday Night Football. You know how much fun that was to watch a 50-pound overweight Philip Rivers changing plays at the line, throwing hot air balloons. He's got no zip. But he threw a couple of touchdowns because he's playing chess and he knew how to manipulate guys on defense and he knew how to keep the Colts in it. It's not his fault that Lou Anarumo's defense could not stop anything that Kyle Shanahan threw at him. And the 49ers now have a clear line and a clear path to the number one overall seed. If they win out, that's it. Just win their final two games. There is a chance that they don't have to get on an airplane again this year, Jory. They could be number one, play two home games, and play the Super Bowl in their own building.
Yeah, which, I mean, we've seen recently. We've seen the Rams play a Super Bowl in L.A. We've seen the Tampa Bay Buccaneers do so in Tampa. And so I think it's really interesting to me just the 49ers have sustained the success, but this isn't the same formula because they don't have Nick Bosa. They don't have Fred Warner, who were two of their defensive stalwarts. They're not playing with Brandon Ayuk, who hasn't been showing up, and Deebo Samuel, who they traded to the Commanders. So first of all, Brock Purdy had an excellent game, 5 passing touchdowns, the first 49ers quarterback to do that in over 30 years. And then you look at what he's doing with his weapons. George Kittle, it seems like, has avoided a high ankle sprain. It looks like it's just a mid to low, they said, which means it's a little less finicky in the recovery. But on both sides of the ball, and I should say all three phases, they were the dominant team. And you kind of felt for Phillip Rivers, who I know we'll get to, when you saw that just there wasn't a lot of help, as he seemed to be doing his part throughout the game. But on the 49ers end of it, when you watch that game last night, you have to wonder who's scarier than the 49ers. And I'm not saying they're the scariest, but they're definitely in that upper echelon of scary, in my opinion.
Yeah, they're scary on offense. I'll say that. I mean, they can outscore anybody. And we're going to talk about Kyle Shanahan later. I have thoughts on Kyle Shanahan and where he ranks among the NFL coaches this year. But I just think he's done an excellent job, like tremendous job. When you look at the injuries they've had, the adversity they've faced, the division they play in, the fact that they're 2 home wins away from the number one seed is crazy. Yeah. Like, we're not talking about it enough, really. Now, they have to play the Bears and the Seahawks. Are they going to sweep those games? I don't think so, but it's right. I didn't think they'd have 11 wins right now either. So maybe they can. I will say this. We all celebrated Phillip Rivers last night. It was a great story. It was an awesome night for him. It was very cool. Blah, blah, blah. The 49ers defense is a problem. The fact that a 44-year-old quarterback was torching him like that, not really great. Like, nobody wanted to mention that part, but okay, that's fine. But the 49ers, I don't even care what happens. I don't care if they're 1-and-done in the playoffs. I don't care if they get a wild card. They've had such a remarkable season overcoming injuries. Other teams have had injuries that just folded up. Like, okay, we can't do anything. Lions on defense. Well, we have all these defensive injuries. This excuse, that excuse. Well, 49ers had those excuses and then some. And here they are, 11-4. Hats off to that whole organization. They've done a tremendous job. Brock Purdy looked great last night. Anybody who was saying like 2 months ago, hey, maybe Mac Jones should start for the 49ers, just go delete those posts, because that was nonsense to begin with, and it looks even worse now. 49ers, excellent. Excellent job by them all season long. I can't believe they're in this spot, really.
It's smoke and mirrors, honestly, what they're doing on defense. Like Jory, you mentioned Bosa and Fred Warner. Those are the two, obviously, all pros they're missing. They're also missing Michael Williams, their first-round pick. He blew his knee out midseason. So it's not a who's who on defense. It's like a veritable who's he on defense. I saw them a couple of weeks ago. I had somebody on their sideline. Put it this way. When I saw the 49ers, someone said to me a couple of weeks ago, like, I don't know that anyone in our secondary would start for many teams elsewhere. Like, they are holding it together with scotch tape. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Robert Saleh deserves credit for this. He is going to get interviews in the next cycle. How many ever openings we have, he is going to get a couple of interviews. He has a lot, really, to answer for what went wrong in New York, right? And maybe he's better the second time around. But as a coordinator this year, he is doing the job. And yeah, on Sunday night, I do think they could beat the Bears, although they got to stop the run. Caleb Williams moves around just a little bit better than Phillip Rivers. But regardless, it is there for the taking. 2 home games. If they win them both, you get 2 home games in the playoffs, and then potentially you get to the Super Bowl. As for the Colts, as Phillip said, I think Phillip did a really good job summarizing it afterwards. Like, guys, I'm a great story. I am, but like, we lost. Like, this is fun. This is awesome. Like, every fat dad, and he didn't say that, but every fat dad in the backyard, this was for him last night. You have so many families, like, getting together already. It's Monday of Christmas week. No one's working this week. So they're all sitting by the fire watching this game. How many dads are going, I could give you 5 plays before my Achilles goes? That's what he's doing. It's like the great American holiday story, Jory.
Yeah, I mean, Phillip Rivers was definitely a blast to watch, and it was fun to see their offense open up more than he had against the Seattle Seahawks a week prior. And you kind of, like, it didn't look good, but it worked. And that was kind of the case until I know there was the pick six late in the game, but that was more of a desperation. I mean, I had my husband come in. I'm like, okay, look at this. And he was like, wait, but it worked. I'm like, yeah, but it doesn't look good. You have to keep watching. And I mean, sometimes it'd be a little short, but like credit to Alec Pierce when you have guys like that who are able to make you right. And he just really clearly does understand the offense. I love the clips that were coming out on Tuesday of like, here's all the dummy calls and dummy formations that he was throwing at the Niners defense. I do want to ask you guys, though, on the 49ers front, yes, Phillip Rivers looked great, or not great. He looked very good, and he looked great for his age. And I recognize that the 49ers defense was a factor in that. But to me, I wondered if Robert Saleh and that group just went in there and said, well, if we stop the run and we shut down Jonathan Taylor, we're going to be just fine. Let him throw the ball. It's not going to be enough to win. There's going to be an opportunity. And I think they had like 52 total, or it's 50. It was 58 total rushing yards, and like 46 of those from Jonathan Taylor. So I'm curious, do you guys think that the Niners defense can't work, or that they think that if they're a little bit soft on the pass, but they stop the run? Because if they stop the run the way they did against the Colts, against the Bears this week, they might be fine.
They might. I mean, the Bears' run game is a totally different animal, not to take away from Jonathan Taylor in any way at all. They just have so many different ways to beat you, because they do have Caleb's ability to move out of the pocket and rip it. Frank, this is an amazing look. You got a great game on Sunday night. There are times when you kind of limp to the finish and you're like, do we flex out that Sunday night game? But there's all these national window games with three on Thursday and two on Saturday. That's a real deal game on Sunday night.
Yeah, big time implications. And I mean, to your point, Jory, yes, you can get by like that, but I think that's a problem for the 49ers. They can say, we could take away your strength, but oh boy, we need to hold out against whatever your counterpunch is. And when you get to the playoffs, most teams have a counterpunch. They're going to say, well, oh wow, you're going to sell out to stop the run. We know you can't rush the passer. I think they have 14 sacks still this season. Like,
they cannot rush the passer.
They just can't.
Miles Garrett has more sacks than the 49ers.
Right. I don't even blame them. Like, what can you do? Any team loses a Nick Bosa-level player and a Fred Warner-level player, you are not going to be good on defense. They already weren't very good on defense with those guys. It was like, these guys are holding it together because they're unbelievable playmakers. You lose both of those guys, and it's like, whatever. I just respect the heck out of Robert Saleh and what he's done. The way they've held this together, like you said, with kind of scotch tape. Robert Saleh, unless Mike Tomlin, John Harbaugh are available, those type of guys, Robert Saleh would be at the top of my list coaching candidates. And you said, like, he's going to have to answer for what happened in New York. Robert Saleh just needs to bring a picture of Woody Johnson to the interview and say, have you heard of this guy? Do you know Woody Johnson?
Or the 2025 results and everything that happened since he's left. 2024 after he left, and before, 2025. Right? It's looked worse since he left.
They're not any better without me.
If you're an NFL owner who holds working for the Jets against a coach, you're just not doing it right. The Jets are a tire fire. Like, they're awful. They're a terrible organization. Like, they're acquiring guys based on Madden ratings. Woody Johnson's kid, they're like, oh yeah, his Madden ratings are really good. Like, that's the Jets. So I don't hold that against Robert Saleh at all. In fact, I see it as a positive. If you coached a couple of years in that mess, once you get to an actual functional organization, you're going to do pretty well. So hats off to Robert Saleh. He's done a great job. I think he's fantastic. I think I don't think this 49ers team could do much in the playoffs. Just because,
Frank,
of what
that's
we
a Jets shirt you're wearing, isn't it?
I could no, it's close enough though. I like the Jets uniforms. That's one thing they do right, I guess. But I think
the Jets
that
are so bad that they didn't even get Pro Bowlers or Pro Bowl alternates. They're one of three teams with no one. So Nick Frank and I, according to Andrew, have more Pro Bowl recognition than the Jets.
The Jets had zero interceptions this year. I've never heard a stat like that. I've never heard a stat.
That's
like zero.
They don't have a pick. I love that.
It's unbelievable. Like, that is,
and they have a defensive really back as a head coach. 2 weeks.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Yeah. The Jets are awful, but the 49ers are not.
I played Madden.
I
play Madden every Friday. It helps me get ready for the Browns game. Like, hey, I could visualize the other numbers on the other team. Browns are 16-0 on my Madden on Fridays. They never lost. Now, Shador's a Pro Bowler. The game's usually 50-0. Miles got like 80 sacks.
What level are you playing on, Andrew? What level? You on rookie?
I'm playing a rookie. I'm an old man. You think I'm playing on anything other than rookie?
And have you ever played online? Like, these 12-year-old kids?
I'm not taking on some 10-year-old down the street. The 10-year-old down the street, my 11-year-old nephew can whip me.
Yeah, the driveway kids, bring them in.
Yeah, that's right. If you try playing online, there's some 12-year-old kid that will beat you like 98 to nothing and talk to you the whole time. So like, don't do that. Please don't. It's bad for your ego. Trust me.
It's funny. Speaking of Jets, Malachi Corley, the Browns wide receiver now, who's actually turned into a nice little find after the Jets gave up on him. He was on the Browns Radio Network preview show last night, and he was talking about playing Madden. And they said, oh, well, you must not broadcast your gamer tag. He's, oh, no, it's me. You can find me. It's my face and everything. Like, it's my actual Madden headshot. Like, I'm good to go. Like, really? He's like, yeah, anybody can play me. Let's go. It was actually kind of endearing. So with that game last night, with the Colts losing, the Jags, Chargers, and Bills are all in. So that's official. There are now 10 out of the 14 spots already taken. There is a scenario in which we go to week 18 with nothing to decide but seeding. There is a somewhat plausible scenario. It's a lot of, it's like a 10-team parlay, whatever, I'll tweet it, where we could go to the final week with the entire field set for the first time since 1974. And then what does the league do week 18? Trying to come up with meaningful games and that final game 272. Who knows? We'll worry about that next week. One of the significant games on Saturday is the Packers and the Ravens at Lambeau. We don't know who's going to play quarterback for either team. Lamar Jackson has the back injury. Jordan Love is banged up. Malik Willis is banged up as well. But if the Packers beat the Ravens, it means the Steelers are in and they win the AFC North. And they may not, Mike Tomlin didn't say no today, play their starters, and that would include Aaron Rodgers, Sunday in Cleveland at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So there's a world in which Myles Garrett is chasing Mason Rudolph for the all-time sack record, and Pittsburgh's collective heads would explode. Wouldn't that be a world?
Hopefully no literal heads exploding.
Yeah, no helmets being ripped off. No.
Stop it. Myles has never sacked Aaron Rodgers. He's spoken all year openly, Jory, you were there, about his desire to sack Aaron Rodgers. I think it would be great if he did get the record off Aaron Rodgers, and then maybe the Ravens lost, so then Tomlin pulls Aaron, and then he could run up the score on Mason Rudolph in a totally clean and sportsmanlike way. But that's I can't dreamcast. I can't wishcast that. I am just saying. But Jory, you wrote about the Steelers, obviously, after their thrilling win in Detroit. Mike Tomlin made the playoffs again. He and Aaron Rodgers walking off the field, pointing fingers at each other, saying, you're great. No, you're great. No, you're great. No, you're great. And it's amazing how a month ago, matter of fact, the clip is still getting comments on Instagram. Come at me. It's okay. You, me, Brooke Pryor, we all said it. It looked as if it was over. It is not over, clearly. Matter of fact, Mike Tomlin might be the only one standing in the AFC North.
Yeah, it's a great question because, as we know, just a few weeks ago at Accretor Stadium, home field for the Pittsburgh Steelers, that fan base was chanting Fire Tomlin. And there started to be this question of, if the Steelers don't make the playoffs, if they don't win the AFC North, is this the year that Mike Tomlin and the Steelers finally decide that it's time for something new? Now, the win over the Lions secures that for the 19th straight season, every season that Mike Tomlin has been the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, they have not had a losing record. They'll have a winning record this year. There are some 500 years in that mix. And on top of that, regular and postseason wins included, he hit his 200th win against the Lions. So as he and Aaron Rodgers and veteran defensive player Cam Hayward were walking off the field, you have Tomlin all hyped up saying these guys are monsters, and Rodgers is looking at the camera pointing at Tomlin, 200 effing wins right here. There was definitely quite a bit of celebration, confidence, arrogance, you could say it, but it was kind of like, hey, well, we're going to take this lap. We don't know what's coming. I think what's interesting to me is that in many ways, the Steelers look like the most functional team in the AFC North right now. I think that the Steelers' defense rounding into form is one of the most impressive parts to me, because we all remember at the end of last year when they had their five-game skid at the end of the season, the defense was really the big thing. It's like it didn't matter if they were against Philly, if they were against Baltimore, who it was, everyone was kind of running right over them, and they looked really good against the Detroit Lions. I mean, even without TJ Watt, who continues to be out of commission from a partially collapsed lung and the surgery to recover that, and without Nick Herbig, they've got some other guys missing. Even without that, the defense looked good. And so when I looked at that game, I kind of had this feeling of, yes, of course, Aaron Rodgers wants to be great. And of course, the Steelers want to get as much out of Aaron Rodgers as they can. But I don't know that Aaron Rodgers has to be great for them to win a playoff game, because they had over 200 rushing yards against the Detroit Lions. Their defense, when they were fresher because of some of that run game, although I guess if you keep having 45-yard touchdown rushes, you're not necessarily that fresh because they're still quicker possessions. That defense was fresh enough that they were making an impact. And it was kind of this time where I'm like, for so much of Aaron Rodgers' career, he was carrying the group. And it felt like maybe this is a team that doesn't need them to carry him. So I'm curious what you guys think. One, how great does Rodgers need to be? And two, is a playoff berth enough to say, let's keep Tomlin? Or do they need to finally get that playoff win that they haven't gotten for close to a decade?
That's
Frank, people
coming,
accuse me of being biased. Frank, you go first.
Yeah, I do.
And the funny thing about Aaron Rodgers is he's probably not going to be great, but he's been very good the past few weeks. It's an awesome story. It is absolutely impressive.
Yeah, it is.
I know why nobody's talking about it, because nobody likes Aaron Rodgers. Nobody wants to give him any more flowers, but it's one of the cool stories of this NFL season, any NFL season. Guy's 42. Like, this is pretty remarkable that he's able to come on and make the playoffs like this. But I'll tell you something. We can sit here. We're not Steelers fans, right? Especially Andrew. And we can sit here and talk about how, oh, this is so impressive. This is so... The same people who are chanting fire Tomlin, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. We're going to get the wild card weekend. The Pittsburgh Steelers are going to probably be the 4th seed. They're almost locked into that. The Buffalo Bills, practically speaking, are locked into the 5th seed. The Bills are going to be like a 7-point favorite at Pittsburgh. I assume they're going to win. I have questions about the Bills too, but I think we'd all pick the Bills to win that game, right? And once they do, if that happens, those same people that are chanting fire Tomlin are going to be saying fire Tomlin, because every Steelers fan I know has said the same thing. They're sick of just being barely in the playoffs and getting one and done. They're just done with this. They want to get over the hump somehow. They just think it's gone stale. And to those people, that faction of fans, it's a pretty large faction of Steelers fans who feel this way. A simple playoff berth is not going to be enough. We could sit here and be like, wow, this is impressive. And I think it is. But they're going to say, so what? We got beat by 17 points by the Buffalo Bills in the first round of the playoffs. What difference does it make? And it does. And that does seem to be the story of the post-Roethlisberger Steelers, that they're just not good enough to win any playoff games or make any noise in the AFC. They're just kind of there. Yes, they have their winning seasons barely, but they're not making any noise in the playoffs. So what's this all about? And I think that's going to be a real conversation we're going to be having in 3 weeks.
But Frank, do you think there's a better option out there? I think that is going to be the conversation.
I don't personally know.
It doesn't matter.
But I will say,
it's still going to be the conversation.
Yeah, it'll be the conversation. I don't think ownership is going to feel that way, because they've over and over and over again, they've basically said Tomlin's our guy, right? But the fan base, I think, is very restless about no playoff wins since whatever year that was, and all these playoff failures, and barely getting into the playoffs with a winning record. So do I think there's a better coach out there than Mike Tomlin? No. I think if he's fired, he's number one on the list of every team with an opening should be calling him. Even teams without openings should be like, can we fire our guy right now and get Mike Tomlin? Is that a possibility? Because he's that good. But also, I did say this a couple weeks ago, and I'm not going to go back on it. Sometimes the message does get stale. Sometimes you just need to start something different. And I don't know if the Steelers... Are the Steelers closer to being a Super Bowl contender right now? No, they're really not. Like, they're going to get in the playoffs, and they're going to be number 14 on the list, unless the Panthers get in, I guess. But we're going to sit there and rank the 14 playoff teams on how good they are and how good, well of a chance they have to win a Super Bowl.
The Steelers going to be Panthers. Because they have
The Buccaneers are going to be. I pick the Buccaneers to win a Super Bowl over the Steelers.
Yeah. No, they're going to be there. But Frank, I'm totally with you. And listen, to take my bias for against the Steelers aside, go back to that game where they lost to the Bills 3 weeks ago. Bosa hits Rodgers. He breaks a bone in his left hand and or wrist. He's battered and bloodied, and they're booing Renegade, overrated song, by the way. And you're like, it's over. I said it was over. Everybody said it was over. It was over. To their credit, they deserve their flowers. They deserve their Permane brothers, whatever they want. They turned it around, and they're rolling people now. I'm not convinced their defensive issues are fixed. They have still signed every single veteran aging defensive back on the planet because they're trying to do anything to make it work. But to their credit, they're there, and they're going to make the playoffs. And I do think it is going to end in the same way, and it is what we said back in the summer when they were doing this dance with Aaron Rodgers, or at least it's what I said. I don't think this is going to help them win a Super Bowl. So if they're 9-8 or if they're 10-7 and they have a one and done exit in the postseason, then for better or for worse, the people that have always wanted Tomlin out are still going to want him out. and they're still going to be picking 21, 22, 23, 24 in that window where you generally don't go find another franchise quarterback. Now, the Giants may have done that. They traded back up and in that window got Jackson Dart. So it can be done, but it's another year where you're like, okay, but how do we truly, truly transition to the future? People think it's going to be a cakewalk here in Cleveland on Sunday. It might be. But the Steelers have not won here in Cleveland since Ben Roethlisberger hung them up. They've lost three in a row here and four out of five against Kevin Stefanski. And that's been not just with Baker Mayfield. That's with been Dorian Thompson Robinson and Jameis Winston as well. So who knows? I don't know, certainly. But yeah, I think it's going to be the same song. Jory, final word on this.
Yeah, I agree that the fans will be saying this. I just think the Steelers have to wonder, because to me, you send Mike Tomlin out or he goes somewhere else, I still think the Giants would be a great fit if there is a change. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh's in a rebuild. They don't have a quarterback. They have an aging core. I think that rebuild's coming one way or another, and I think you win more games along the rebuild. You could argue that's not the right answer, but I do not think they're better. It's not just about next year. I think next 3, 5, and possibly even 10 years, certainly with whatever coach they could hire this year, they're not going to be better off.
Yeah, we are on the same page. I agree with both of you. Frank, it's going to be the same story. Jory, ownership's not going to do anything, and they're better off with him than without him. I think we all kind of sort of agree here. All right, coming up next on Inside Coverage, should Mike Tomlin get consideration for Coach of the Year? Who should be that man? And is it Kyle Shanahan? That's next on Yahoo. It's Inside Coverage here on Yahoo, and we always do. Hi, I'm Andrew, by the way. Frank and Jory are here. We always like to pull the curtain back and let you into our lives. Like, you hear the siren all the time in the background at Jory's place, and Frank tells us how he spends his Sundays at a Buffalo Wild Wings, and how sometimes he feels guilty about he's there all day. So, you know, let's order something else. Frank also revealed that he was almost late for the taping of today's show. He was there on time, though, Frank. Good job out of you. Because you were out in the zoo that is December 23rd shopping. Yeah. Yeah. Are you okay?
Now, you guys know me well enough to know I'm not very bright. Right? Let's be real. Like, I'm not the sharpest guy in the world. But I'm usually not so dumb as to do last-minute shopping on December 23rd. But I did so this year. Because I've just been putting things off. It's fine. It happens. Yeah, don't do that. Don't. No, you don't. You don't want to do that, especially in Castle Rock, Colorado. We have big outlet malls out here. For anybody in Colorado, you know exactly what Castle Rock is all about. And it is like it is madness. It is absolute madness. It's barely a functioning city at this point. We're just a gridlock. We're in Castle Rock, Colorado. Yeah, don't. And if you actually get into a store, it looks like just a rugby scrum for everything. Like, yeah, it just don't go shopping on December 23rd. No, it's just no. Did that idea about it? Bad, dumb.
It's funny you say that, Frank, because I tend to get my groceries in the middle of the day because I'm like, oh, usually there's not that many people at the grocery store. Well, we have to work a lot of nights in this industry. We have a later podcast recording these days. I went to the grocery store today being like, oh, yeah, I'll just get it real quick. I have an interview in 30 minutes, but, you know, lunch, dinner, they're not going to show up on their own. And I could not believe how many people were at Whole Foods in the middle of the day. I'm like, don't these people have to work? And my husband's like, no, they don't.
No, they're not working. Like, today, no. Everyone's out.
I'm like, can you guys at least clear the lane so I can just run around? I'm like running into people. Yeah.
I was doing my shopping, a lot of my shopping around town Saturday in Cleveland. And I had spoken to Kevin Stefanski earlier in the day. Full disclosure, sometimes we tape our Sunday game day interview on Saturday evening. Anyway, so, and I said, hey, do you have all your shopping done? And he said, this is on mic. He goes, no, I have elves that handle that, jokingly. Not a lot of time, you know, to get out there. I have elves that handle that. I go, you just tell the elves, hey, buy yourself something nice. Like, you know what you like, you can go get it. Because I think the elves understand that. Okay, cool. So we laughed. A couple hours later, I'm out shopping and I run into a Browns assistant coach that shall remain nameless. I'm like, how far you got everything done yet? He looked at me, he was like, have you gotten everything done? I'm like, no, I just started today. He goes, yeah, I'm starting right now. I said, Kevin said he has elves. He goes, oh, really? Great, send them my way. I would love to have some of those elves. That would be great. I got most of my stuff done Saturday, but then I had to run out last night to buy a couple of cards because I was taking stuff into the office today, you know, some thank yous, you know, and I didn't have cards. And like last night at the Walgreens down the street, everything picked over, gone, nothing there. I'm like, Andrew,
do you like happy birthday, grandpa? I love getting random cards. Just be like, yeah, it wasn't because I didn't want it. I just thought this was funnier.
You know, my brother and I used to do that in our 20s. We thought we were funny. Like we would, like on my dad's birthday, give him a happy Hanukkah card or something like that. You know, something, a card that didn't make sense. It's Valentine's Day. Here's a card for Kwanzaa. We thought we were funny.
I think it's funny. I'll give you that.
I still think it's funny.
It's like for my dad's 60th, I gave him 2 happy 30th cards. I'm like, this works.
Well, that's pretty sharp. I like that. I like that.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to Coach of the Year. Frank, you love awards. And I mean that in like an endearing way. Some people pound the table because they are passionate about awards. You are one of them. A tip of the cap to you, sir. Coach of the Year. Go ahead. Set the table.
Oh, yeah, man. I'll talk MVP in like mid-September. I don't care. It's fun. People like talking about it. And I'll tell you that Coach of the Year, I probably rant about Coach of the Year in a little bit. It's a broken award, but so interesting this year. It is. There are legitimately, as we had 2 weeks left in the season, 5 candidates really stand out among Coach of the Year, maybe a 6th. Let's look at real quick, BetMGM odds. Mike Vrabel's the favorite. He's plus 150. Kyle Shanahan's 2nd, plus 200. Mike McDonald is 3rd on the list at plus 375. Then a little bit of a gap between him and Ben Johnson at plus 600. I'm actually surprised Ben Johnson's that long of odds. Liam Cohen, plus 650. And then Sean Payton kind of hanging around at 40-1. But really, 5 guys have separated themselves, and I don't know which of those 5 guys is going to win. I know which one I think should win, but it's kind of crazy. Like, you don't, any award, you usually have one guy standing out among the rest. Maybe it's a 2-man race, 3 tops, 5. 5 coaches are kind of vying for it this year. It's pretty wild.
So yeah, I think it's super interesting.
I was going to say, Jory, this is one where at least look at the top 5. There is no wrong answer. And I cut you off. So that was the wrong answer. So go.
No, I completely agree. And I think it's just, how do you weight this? And I always think about this when I'm working on my ballot for MVP coach there. I'm glad we're having this conversation. And for me, you say, okay, well, there's someone who's new and what they did, because there's the cultural element. There's the schematic element. There's if you're a head coach who has a huge influence on the talent acquisition and who you draft and who you didn't free agency, then are you going to factor that in? And for me, I always have to think about, like, okay, I've seen the Patriots a lot more in person this year than I've seen the Bears. So I can tell you what these players and coaches have told me about how Mike Vrabel has reestablished a toughness and a discipline and sort of influenced not just the scheme, but also the character and also the coaches he's hired. But then when I go to Ben Johnson, I'm like, okay, I need to start asking coaches and execs around the league, well, what are some of the ways Ben Johnson did this? Why is it working with Caleb? Why is his scheme being able to work the same way it worked in Detroit? And then, of course, you have, as we've talked about on this show at length, the smaller market teams like Liam Cohen, where you might not have watched them as much, but you don't want to, I mean, understate. This is a team that in the Jaguars that last year, their offense was 26th in points per game and 25th in yardage. Now they're 7th in points per game and 15th in yardage. Defense went from 27th and 31st to 10th and 13th. So they're bottom of the barrel on offense and defense to top of the barrel in 1 year. And it doesn't seem like flukes. They actually seem like they're building something sustainable. So I think that it's not only about who did a great job. It's about the rate of change it is, whether we like it or not. It could, you want to say most improved coach is like a little bit annoying if you're giving it to that, but that is a factor because if the coach comes in and does something that changes it drastically, then you feel like there is an influence of the coach. And then, of course, you have a team like the Niners where, well, all of a sudden you've got these injuries. You've got Brock Purdy some weeks, Mac Jones the other, and it doesn't really matter. They're still getting wins. You lose your top defenders. It doesn't really matter. You created enough of a coaching pipeline that when a guy like Robert Saleh is available, he wants to come to you. So I think there are so many different ways to judge this award that I'm curious how you guys go about prioritizing those factors.
It's a great question. Go ahead, Frank.
I just think that the whole first year thing is a little overrated because of this. And I agree with you. You got to set the culture and all that. But you're also coming in with a low bar. Like Ben Johnson, yes, he's improved things a lot. Well, Matt Eberflus wasn't very good. And the same could be said about pretty much all these first years.
Does that work against him? I mean,
I don't think it should be as much of a
bully. Even with an average bar.
It shouldn't give extra credit. We're saying the Patriots improved so much. Yeah, well, Jared Mayo was a disaster. Like that has to be factored in too. That
Frank,
the Patriots
that team
were
had no
bad
talent
because of their previous coach, and they gained a lot of talent in the offseason. They still did have Drake May.
Got rid of, other than Drake May, their entire 2024 draft class is a bust. It's all gone. They're all gone.
Oh yeah, yeah. But they also spent more money than anybody else in free agency and had a really good draft.
They did.
If you want to give Vrabel credit for that, I'm fine with it. I think Mike Vrabel is very good. But I think here's why I think Coach of the Year is broken. My favorite stat about Coach of the Year, it's all sports, all levels, so I'm going to go to this. I always use this. ACC Men's Basketball Coach of the Year. In Mike Krzyzewski's final 22 seasons as a coach, he never won ACC Men's Basketball Coach of the Year. The greatest college basketball coach of all time was never the best coach in the ACC for his last 22 years. Really? Really?
Like, did they give it to Dean Smith because
no,
of all those
he was,
fake A's?
He was gone by then. There's a lot of getting for Josh Pastner got it 1 year. I know that. Like, this is what happens. We judge Coach of the Year not on who's the best coach. We judge it on preseason expectations a lot of times. And we say, oh, well, the Jacksonville Jaguars weren't expected to be good, but they're good.
So
Liam Cohen
Dave Canales
must be Vince Lombardi. I'm surprised he hasn't gotten more buzz because that's usually how it's judged based on preseason expectations. That's why Andy Reid never has a shot at Coach of the Year because you're like, well, they're already good. Yeah, but part of the reason is Andy Reid's a really good coach. I think by far and away, there's no wrong answer for Coach of the Year. But I do think, truly, there's only one right answer for Coach of the Year, and that's Kyle Shanahan. Kyle Shanahan has dealt with so many injuries on both sides of the ball, and he has put together things just remarkably well. To have that team at 11-4 right now, I don't care if they lose out. I don't care if they don't get the number one seed in the NFC. I don't think anybody has done a better coaching job this year than Kyle Shanahan. And you looked at his offense yesterday that just had the Colts in a blender. And you're like, I can't discount Kyle Shanahan because he's been doing this 5, 6, 7 years. No, he's still doing it. Whoever wins Coach of the Year, maybe Vrabel, maybe a Peyton win it. You would not pick that coach over Kyle Shanahan if you were hiring somebody tomorrow. Coach of the Year rarely goes to the best coach. I think by far the best coach this year has been Kyle Shanahan. I hope he wins the award. I don't think he will because it's going to go to some first-year guy. But I don't think that should be the criteria. I think it should be who did the best job coaching this year, who is the best coach in this field. I think that's Kyle Shanahan by a landslide. I think there's no question he should be Coach of the Year.
Yeah, Frank, I'm glad you make this argument because I think it's interesting since Kyle Shanahan has probably done the best coaching job this year. And going back to the whole idea of, okay, how are you going to factor in some of the adversity, whether that's being new, whether that's the injuries? The only thing I would ask you is, there are certain teams that are just injured every year. I think we see it with the 49ers, and we're starting to see it with the Detroit Lions. And when I talk about the Detroit Lions, my understanding is I don't think their medical staff sucks. Like, that's a lazy argument. I do think, though, that when I go to the Detroit Lions for training camp compared to when I go to the Dallas Cowboys, it looks like the Lions are playing in real live Sunday games, regular season at least, because they're just so physical. And different teams take different benchmarks in terms of we believe this physicality, despite the injury risk, is going to be a net positive on game day, and so we're willing to risk it. But the 49ers injuries are something year over year, and I do think, despite I haven't visited their training camp, but I do think that they're a team that Kyle, by all accounts, just pushes them so hard that they're probably going to have some more injuries. So I don't disagree that what he's done in spite of the injuries and amid the injuries probably is the best coaching job, particularly at this point. But do you have to factor in that some of the adversity might be a little bit self-created?
It's possible. I don't know how to quantify that.
It's interesting. Yeah.
Sometimes you just don't know.
I would also say this, that Kyle Shanahan, it's Kyle or Sean. Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay, the best play callers, I think we would all agree, in the NFL. And what Kyle has done this year is fantastic. I mean, the list of injuries, especially on defense, is utterly ridiculous. They haven't had Brandon Ayuk all year. That's been a wash. But just up and down on the defensive side of the roster, it is almost comical, although no one's injury is funny, what they have had to overcome. But when you say, Frank, well, yeah, if you had to hire one of these guys, who you would hire, who would you hire? It's obviously Kyle Shanahan. That goes every year. I would have said that last year, or the year before, because he's the best play
caller.
Shouldn't the
best coach win coach of the year sometimes? Like, the best coach rarely wins coach of the year.
I'm not
anti-Kyle. Repeat that a few times. It's crazy.
I also think that, for my money, Sean McVay is the best coach in football overall.
That's fine. You want to give Sean McVay coach of the year? I'd honestly have no problem with that at all. At some point, the best coach would win
too, but it's never a career achievement award here. You do have to take into account what they are doing this year. And I'm with you. Like, what Kyle has done this year has been utterly fantastic. I also think that people get so wrapped up in this. Like, I love your passion, Frank. Like, the idea that somehow someone is getting wronged about this. They're not. It's an award. It's a nice award. Now, if you have
my thing about awards, it is just an award, and sometimes voters get fatigued. And I'll bring up Nikola Jokic should have 5 MVPs in a row, but NBA voters are like, we can't give this guy 5 in a row, so they pick somebody.
Right,
else. You're messing with the history of the game at that point. You look back and how do we judge these guys?
I agree.
Who are the 5-time MVPs in NBA history? Bill Russell and this and that.
MVP is different than Coach of the Year.
I actually think Coach of the Year, the way I view it, is the most valuable Coach of the Year. Like, when I'm doing that, and so the same way that for players, I factor into their value what they were asked to do and what they had to overcome and who else was on their team and who they had at coach. I factor that in for Coach of the Year because I want to know which coach provided the most value in this specific season.
And I think that's great. I'm glad you have a method to it. I think there are other people, not to take shots at any of your colleagues there. I think there are other people that just go with their gut. I think this guy's the coach. Okay, great. And they don't, not saying they half-ass their vote, but Jory, you have a method. I don't know that everybody else has a method. I think they look at it and just go, oh yeah, it should be that guy. Why? I don't know. He did more with less. I don't know. Like, no one thought they're going to win. I really like what they did the last month of the year where they turned things around. And it's not scientific. If it were, you wouldn't vote. You'd have a formula. So there is some charm and some beauty to all of this. But Frank, I hear what you're saying about the history of the game. I truly, truly, truly do. I do think that is more significant for player MVPs than it is
more significant
for coach of the year.
But when we're having, I wish we could have a conversation about who's the greatest coach of all time, and we could say, well, Bill Belichick's won coach of the year 8 times. Well, he didn't, because
we look at championships,
don't give it to the best coach
for that. You know,
that we go on championships. But it should be. I wish Coach of the Year was a little more serious award. It's not. It's not a serious award. It's a very unserious award. And that bothers me in many ways. And I know I shouldn't be. It's Christmas. I should be worried about, like, wrapping the gifts. I have to give out. I sit here and I get fixated on how bad Coach of the Year is sometimes. And this is not just NFL. This is every sport, just about every year. The best coach. You know which two coaches had the worst odds for Coach of the Year this year before the season started? Andy Reid and Nick Sirianni, the two Super Bowl coaches last year, had the worst odds to win Coach of the Year. Let
that
sink in
saying,
for a
we
second.
Don't,
how
like,
broken
if you,
that
if
was.
Okay, you get back also, there, we don't respect it.
Well, and also I think there's an element of, like, people do tend to have a hangover after the Super Bowl.
Yeah, of course.
Yes, that's part of it. But I think the reason is because...
But Frank, you're talking about the betting market.
We don't give
The betting market is not... The betting market does not reflect the ability of those coaches. It reflects the whim of the votes of the voter.
Everybody knew Andy Reid could not, not
what these coaches will do.
Everybody knew Andy Reid could not win Coach of the Year this year. He could have gone. He would have had to go. He goes 17
because it's about the voter, not the effort.
That's what bothers me. And I sit here and I say, if we were to sit here and say, well, Josh Allen's been good for 8 years. He can't win MVP this year. That'd be ludicrous. That we'd be like, what? That makes no sense whatsoever. But that's what we
do. Jory, do you know who you're voting for yet?
I mean, I haven't finalized it, no, because there are a couple weeks left in the season, but I have the start of it. But that's my point, is that I do think there are elements of, to me, my goal is have a science. And what I tend to do is start my ballot, get a sense of like, here's who I'm deciding between, and then reach out to coaches and executives and sometimes even players across the league who I respect and say, hey, you have played against both of these coaches. Which did you think was harder to scheme against? You played against both of these players. Who did you consider more of a threat in the game? Because I tend to think that they have a more inside look, and I recognize it's not a word for players among players or other words, but I like to do that. And so that's my thing, is it's not, my goal is not to, oh, I watch every second of film and then I do it. I say, no, these people whose job is to try and beat these people, how do they view it?
Which is great. You have a method, which is why we love you. Jory will be voting for whomever Frank wants least for Coach of the Year. And then that'll be a show after that. Coming up next, Frank's guaranteed playoff projections, because it's almost that time where you can guarantee playoff projections. They're coming up next on Inside Coverage. It's Inside Coverage on Yahoo as we sit here on Tuesday evening of Christmas week, the 23rd of December. We have 10 of the 14 playoff spots already locked in, which is kind of crazy. I told you that would give you the multiple team parlay to get everything locked in. Here it is. If the Packers win or Detroit loses, in other words, if the Packers clinch a spot, that's one. Carolina wins plus a Tampa loss. Therefore, Carolina wins the NFC South. If Baltimore loses or Pittsburgh wins, it's a magic number of one for the Steelers, and the Steelers lock in the AFC North. And then if Houston wins or Indy loses, the Colts need to win out here and have Houston lose this week, then Houston is locked in. And if that is the case, then we head to week 18 with Mike North sitting in the league office going, how do we make a schedule in which there has to be a Saturday doubleheader and competitive balance across the day on Sunday where everything is decided other than the seeding? The number ones could be up for grabs. Obviously, that is going to be very important. That is the backdrop here to, as we say hi to Jory and Frank again, Frank Schwab's playoff projections. Are we ready to put them on the screen, please? Let's do it. Because as we get ready for the holidays, these are the stocking stuffers for you. In the AFC, Frank has the Bills, Chargers, and the Texans as your wild cards. And you have the Broncos, the Patriots, the Jaguars, and the Steelers as your division winners. Jory, the floor is yours.
All right, Frank, if I'm reading these week-to-week comparisons correctly, my understanding is the Texans were the biggest fallers this week, from third place last week, winners of the division, to seventh, not only no longer winning the division, but below the Bills and Chargers as well. So I recognize the Texans played the Raiders close, but do you believe in the Texans? Do you think they can win a playoff game, or did you lose hope in them after that game against the Raiders?
No, not so much. This was more a function of the Jaguars. I didn't expect the Jaguars to go on the road and beat the Broncos, but when they did, the math changes in the AFC South. You look at the paths, you look at the remaining schedules, and you just say, I don't know how the Jaguars could screw this up. Like, they're going to win the division. And then you have, okay, so the Jaguars win the division, Texans get pushed down. Well, they play at the Chargers this week. I'd pick the Chargers in that game. They would have the tiebreaker at that point. So the Texans get pushed all the way down to seven. But I still do like the Texans. I just like them more when I thought they would start off the playoffs with a home game. It's going to be a lot tougher. Right now I have them, I think, playing against the Patriots in a wild card round. Could they go beat the Patriots? I think they could. Like, their defense is so good that I would give them a shot to beat the Patriots in New England. But it's obviously a lot tougher. It's a much bigger challenge than facing that first game at home. So it's just the Jaguars win on Sunday at Denver could be the one game, other than maybe Seahawks-Rams last week, that changes the entire picture of the playoffs. Because now all of a sudden, Denver's no sure thing for the one seed anymore. The Chargers could track them down and win the AFC West if they win in Week 18, because Chargers play at Denver. So that was a massive, massive win in trying to figure out the playoff picture the rest of the way.
Yeah, that was kind of where I was going to go, Jory. So good job there. I would ask Frank, what do you think the likelihood is that all three, if this holds in the AFC, all three wild card teams win?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, because the Broncos are the one team I really have a lot of faith in, and they'd be the one seed. They wouldn't have to play a wild card weekend.
Right.
I would put it probably the highest that we've seen in a really long time of probability of all three road teams winning. I don't really trust the Steelers. We talked about that. I think the Bills are going to be favored.
I don't either.
I think, would the Chargers be favored over the Jaguars? Probably not. But
that's a tough one.
But the Chargers are a really good football team.
I trust the Jaguars after this week.
I do too. That's one that I don't think would happen.
Cohen's done a great job. He really has. And then Texas at Patriots, like I just laid out, like their defense is good enough that they could beat anybody. So yeah, it's possible. We've talked about this all season, it seems. AFC, and just throw them all in a hat and pick one out. I don't trust the Bills. I don't trust the Bills to win three straight road games. They should have lost to the Browns on Sunday. Like, they have a lot of deficiencies and one unbelievable Hall of Fame quarterback that might drag them to a Super Bowl, but I don't even trust them. I don't know who you would pick out of the AFC right now. I think it's an absolute just flipping coins at this point.
Does anyone outside of Buffalo, the headline didn't get a lot of play, but the Bills sat down not only Gabe Davis, but they sat down Keon Coleman. He was a healthy scratch again last week as a second round pick. And the whole Brandon Bean yelling at guys on the radio about criticizing his lack of drafting wide receivers or not going out and trying to get a big name wide receiver. According to our friend Tom Pelissero, they made a push at the deadline to get Jalen Waddle. Right. So they made an effort there. Certainly didn't do it. The Dolphins held on to him. But watching that team up close last week, that no one on the outside scares anybody. So much so that they set down their second round pick as a healthy scratch. Guy from a year ago who's supposed to be your lead dog this year. After the previous game in week 15, Keon Coleman played 39 snaps and did not have a single target. So you get to the postseason against the Bills. I believe in Josh Allen. I believe in James Cook. I mean, oh my, James Cook is good this year. He also has over 500 yards before contact. That line is blowing people off the ball. But the offense runs through those two tight ends. I'm not saying you can shut them down. They do not threaten you on the outside at all. Now, I still think they would go to Pittsburgh and win, but I don't know that the Jaguars would lose to the Chargers at home.
Probably not, but the Chargers, I don't put anything past Jim Harbaugh. He's unbelievable.
Unbelievable by unbelievable, you mean like different.
He's different. He's different. If he still had the guys he had at Michigan, he might know the Jaguar signals. Who knows? But, you know, hey, he's a good coach. He's a great coach. One of the greatest coaches in the world.
I will say, while I don't think that the Bills' receiving core is particularly scary, I do think their tight ends are quite good in Kincaid and Knox. Like, I do think that those are guys who you have to worry about in their pass catchers. So I don't think that it's only a running game, and I don't think it's only Josh Allen, but definitely they're leaning more on tight ends than receivers to star in the passing game.
I agree. All right, let's do the NFC here. Because the NFC is still a bit nuts as well. If we were sitting here a week ago, we said it's going to run through SoFi, the road to Santa Clara. Now the road to Santa Clara might actually start and end in Santa Clara, but not according to Frank. Frank has the Seahawks as the one seed, the Bears as the two seed. And if this holds, we would get a Bears-Packers rematch back in Soldier Field. The Eagles winning the East, and they're the three. The Bucks. Wait, Frank, you have the Bucks.
I know. That was on my list.
And winning the NFC South. Rules dictate somebody has to win it. Then the Rams, the Niners, and the Packers. Go ahead, Jory.
Oh, no, why don't you start this time since you were already on the right track?
Okay, yeah. So evidently you're not voting Dave Canales for Coach of the Year.
He's done a heck of a job, I'll tell you that. After I praised David Tepper yesterday, and then we immediately get done taping, and Charles lights me up for it.
But by the way, you're not making the playoffs.
The math is very easy for the Buccaneers. You beat the Dolphins next week, and the Dolphins showed absolutely nothing with Quinn Ewers last week. So even though the Buccaneers are really limping to the finish, I think the Buccaneers handle business there and beat the Dolphins. Then week 18, you talk about a flex. We need one interesting game in week 18. Panthers-Buccaneers would be for the NFC South. And I think the Buccaneers at home, I'd pick them in that game, I guess. But that division is so bad. Like, it is. I wish they'd Notre Dame this and opt out. Like, come on. We don't need one of you guys in there. Let's let the Lions in instead. Like, it is just a bad division. But ultimately, in the end of the day, I think the Buccaneers beat the Dolphins in week 17, and I think they beat the Panthers in week 18, and they're your NFC South champs.
Okay.
There you go.
So then we get the Rams and the Bucks. You get the Niners at the Eagles. As it sits right now, the current standings, you would get, I want to double check here, you would get the Rams at the Eagles currently, correct. So that would be the rematch of last year's game. Then you get the Packers at the Bears. All right, Jory, the floor is yours.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to know, Frank, if you think the 49ers would beat the Eagles if they go to Philadelphia. I've been there for those games. They can get quite feisty. I was there and Big Dom got kicked out for the regular season game. But yeah, 49ers, Eagles, who are you taking?
I'd still take the Eagles, even with their flaws, just because I do believe the Buccaneers or the 49ers defensive flaws are worse. And also, when we look at the 49ers, as much as I've praised Kyle Shanahan and much as I've praised that team, their last real quality win was week 5, like when they beat the Rams on the road. They've benefited from the schedule. There's just no doubt about that. Now, look, they played the Bears and the Seahawks in the last 2 weeks. If they win out against those teams, tip of the cap. You beat some quality teams late in the season. But right now, as I sit here, I completely 100% respect what the 49ers have done. And maybe they could just outscore the Eagles. I don't think their defense can stop anybody. There's just too many injuries and too many empty spots on that defense for me to trust them to go to a place like the Eagles. Now that's why the race for that 5 seed is so important, because everybody's going to want to play the Buccaneers or the Panthers. Like that is kind of it's not a bye. I'm not going to be so dumb as to say that and have, you know, Buccaneers and Panthers fans calling me bald for 3 weeks like Bears fans have. But I do think that you want the NFC South. Like you would have very much confidence that we can go in there and beat either of those teams, but especially when your option is going to face the Eagles and Philly. Like, yeah, you want the NFC South. You want the 5 seed.
I agree. Remember the Rams, when they won the Super Bowl, had to go to Tampa a couple of years ago, knock out Tom Brady with that YOLO ball that Matthew Stafford threw down the seam 50 yards to one Cooper Kupp. Those are Frank's guaranteed playoff projections. Time for one more thing before we go. I'll go first on this one. We'll do the nice, clean, and wholesome one. Philip Rivers talked about how fun that was for all dads or anyone with a dad bod out there. After the game, remember D Winters had the pick six to kind of seal it, and good job Luke Kuechly on that alt cast of calling it before it happened. He was down there. And this is from my buddy Omar Ruiz from NFL Network. He took the video. He waited for D Winters to finish a television interview, just hung, because he wanted to congratulate and dap up the guy that picked him off to end the game. And for all intents and purposes, kind of ended their season. That is good sportsmanship from the 44-year-old high school coach in Fairhope, Alabama, one Philip Rivers, wearing those fun leather-looking Indiana Knight jerseys last night. Jory, what do you got?
Yeah, mine is also going to be Philip Rivers, but a little bit different. I think so often in this league where it seems like a zero-sum game, only wins and losses, and I recognize those are important, we forget to enjoy any of the moments along the way. There was a coach I texted this week, and I was like, hey, congrats on clinching the playoffs. I know you're not done, but I hope you recognize they've clinched the playoffs after not clinching in recent years. Like, I hope you realize that moment. And Philip Rivers had a great little soundbite with that effect. So I think we're going to listen to it.
Those things, I've learned to really realize that those things can all, you can appreciate all those still, although the outcome isn't what it was, right? They did still happen. You know what I mean? Those first few drives where we ended in touchdowns, those did occur. You're right. Those memories will be there. But again, at the end of the day, we are here to try to win the ball game. But I guess I've grown up and learned how to handle that a little better now.
So here's to all of us growing up and learning that we can appreciate the moments, even when it's not all success.
Cool. Very cool. And I am with Philip Rivers there as well. And now, one more thing from Ebenezer Scrooge.
Yeah, right? You guys are all positive here. I'm going to rip the NFL. But hey, whatever. Look, the NFL's Christmas games this year. The first game, Commanders-Cowboys, means absolutely nothing if we might get a third-string quarterback. Vikings-Lions, the Vikings might be using, they will be using their third-string quarterback, Max Brosmer. The Lions have a 7% chance to make the playoffs. Third game, the Kansas City Chiefs using their third-string quarterback. The Broncos are 13-point favorites. Terrible, terrible games on Christmas. And you can say, yeah, that's bad luck for the NFL. I'm going to go the other way and say, the NFL deserves this. This is karma, NFL, for being so greedy as to keep jamming Christmas games down our throat. Last year, they crossed the line when Christmas was on a Wednesday, and they said, this is a money-making opportunity. Let's put some games on Christmas this year. And now the floodgates are open. We're just going to get multiple games on Christmas every year. From 1920 to 1988, there were two games on Christmas by the NFL. Both were playoff games. In 1971, people complained so much that because you're taking away from their family dinners and all this kind of stuff, that the NFL stepped back and they said, you're right, we're not going to do Christmas games anymore. They introduced another in 1989, and then it was one here and there when it was a Monday night or maybe a Sunday when they moved all the other games to Saturday. 2004, it was multiple games. And then the floodgates are just open. The NFL can't leave well enough alone. Whenever there's any opportunity to make another dollar, they're going to do it. And they've done it with Christmas, putting three games on Christmas Day this year. It's completely unnecessary. You don't need to make every single dollar you could possibly make. Just leave us alone on Christmas as you did for most of the NFL's first 70 years. I don't get it. I don't understand. And the three games they get this year, which are all absolutely terrible for their TV partners, karma for the NFL for being greedy on Christmas. That's all I got to say about that.
Well, I You're wish I had my stopwatch one, going for that one.
Mr. Grinch. Hey, Frank, I'm sorry.
Christmas
I gotta go.
That's stupid. Netflix. Can't we just leave Christmas line. Alone? You got Thanksgiving.
It's Netflix on the other line saying we're never giving you a guest again. So I kid.
Netflix should be the one mad. They're getting these horrible games for billions of dollars.
My brother feels the same way you do. And I said, well, the NBA has games all day. He goes, I don't care about the NBA. I don't watch the NBA. Nobody watches the NBA. Who cares? I'm like, okay, relax. Relax. I hear your point, Frank. I enjoy watching football on Christmas or Hanukkah. I called two games on Hanukkah this year. Both of them were Browns losses. It's a tradition truly unlike any other. Which, by the way, Nance is in town this week calling Browns Steelers. Speaking of a tradition truly unlike any other, Browns Steelers, Nance, Romo, Tracy in town. Joking aside, Frank, I love Ebenezer Scrooge. And I love the Grinch. I love Dickens and I love Dr. Seuss. So thank you for checking both boxes today. Love you. Yeah. And love every one of you and Jory and everyone listening and watching and Madison and Austin and Brett and everyone, because I'm in that holiday big warm hug kind of mood. For all of the above just listed, my name is Andrew. Happy holidays. We will have a Christmas Eve edition previewing the games that matter to us. Maybe not the Christmas games, because I think Frank just gave us that lump of coal. Until then, so long, everybody.